Maine's potato industry, adapting for the future. 90% of the potatoes grown in Maine are grown in Aroostook County. The potato industry adds more than $500 million to Maine's economy, but the importance of the potato to Maine is not just financial. It's a crop with a rich cultural and historical heritage, sustaining generations of people through tough times. Today, Maine's potato industry is changing, with fewer growers and fewer acres cultivated, but with a higher yield per acre. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we come to you live from Presque Isle, right in the heart of potato country, for an update on Maine's potato industry. We'll learn how science is helping farmers, how they are planning for climate change, the impact of the higher minimum wage, and more. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the University of Maine Presque Isle campus, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Potatoes are Maine's number one agricultural product, and that is especially true here in Aroostook County, where 90% of Maine's potatoes are grown. Today, we're going to talk about the mighty potato and what may be in store for the potato industry here in Maine. With me today, Timothy Hobbs, Director of Development and Grower Relations for the Maine Potato Board. James Dwyer is a crops specialist with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Brandon Burse is one of the owners of Burse Farms, a fourth-generation family farm on the shores of Long Lake. As always, we want to hear from you. Are you involved in the potato industry? Have you seen it change over the years? What do you want to know about the Maine potato? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. It also looks like we're live streaming this on Facebook Live if you'd like to watch the program. And welcome to everybody in the audience today. Welcome to all three of you guests. Thank you so much for being here. Tim, I'm going to start with you for a history lesson. Oh, how did potatoes come to be king in Aroostook County?
That would take most of the program to answer, probably.
Okay, okay.
Well, we don't have most of the program to do that, though, do we?
Do you have an abbreviated version?
I think so.
Okay, good.
Okay. My understanding is that they came with the Irish immigrants, and people moved, as the people moved north and settled into this area, they cleared the land for forest products and found that that land was quite fertile, and it lent itself very well to growing potatoes. We have cool nights and warm days in the summer, and that's an ideal condition, and the soil fertility was such that it was lent itself very well to production of potatoes.
And I read by the 1940s, Maine was the biggest, it was number one in the country.
We were,
even
yes,
though we're a small state.
That's correct. We were, about that time, we pushed pretty close to 200,000 acres of potatoes being grown in Maine in the late 40s, just prior to World War II. This year, I think we planted 47,000 acres. So there's been quite a few changes.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about those. Yeah, thank you. Brandon, tell me your family story. Fourth generation farmer. Do you know, is there a family history that's been passed down, how you came to be here?
Yeah, somewhat. My great-grandfather, at the time when he started farming, it was a little different. He had investors, I believe it was out of Boston, and they kind of teamed up together. And they were farming seed potatoes, which is what we produce now. And if you think back, you might have seen one of those pictures of a farmer standing in a field, but he's in a suit, you know, no dirt. And that's the kind of farming he was doing. He had a lot of employees. A lot of local families would come around, large families, you know, over 10 children would all come together during certain times of year and help bring in the crops. And my grandfather, when he got back from World War II, decided to take over the farm, and at the time my great-grandfather had purchased it from the investor. So, and my grandfather took over, and they had a home farm, and they had many other farms, but he focused more on the home farm, which is where we still are today, and still our home farm. And he kind of continued that way, hand-picking and employing local people. And he actually passed away unexpectedly, and my father at the time was working at a bank. And he came home to help bring in the crop with the foreman. And he decided to stay on. He liked the lifestyle and continued with the help and tutelage of other growers and the foreman at the time. And implemented a little more mechanization, new technologies, new equipment. And then my brother and I decided to come back after we finished school at the University of Maine, and it's where we are today.
Did you always know growing up that you'd be on the farm?
Not at all.
Really?
No. When you're out there hot days weeding the fields and picking stones, it's probably not the first thing that comes to mind what you'd like to do in your future. But as you get out there and have other experiences and see what else is out there and the type of lifestyle you had growing up seems really good. And I wouldn't trade it for the world. I'm happy I made that decision.
That's great. Well, Tim, I want to return to this question. Tim mentioned warm days, cool nights. What else makes Maine such an ideal place to grow potatoes?
Well, one of the things is our soils. We have an amazing soil here. In the spring, it dries enough so we can work it quickly. And with our relatively short growing season, that's very important. Yet the soil will hold water, you know, during the dry spells like what we had this year. So it's a really amazing soil, and it's very fertile soil. The other thing, as Tim mentioned, our warm days, cool nights are ideal for potato plants to grow. So we've got, you know, just, you know, really the ideal situation. In Aroostook County, even though we've reduced the number of acres that we plant, we're still the number one county in the United States on a number of acres of potatoes planted.
Hmm. You mentioned this past season. Maybe people who don't live here in Aroostook County don't realize this was a really challenging season for growers, wasn't it? Record high temperatures? What did that do?
We had some very high temperatures. We had some long dry periods, you know, which did stress the potatoes. But again, the soils we have here, we ended up by having, you know, very good yields. As you talk to many of the growers, you'll hear the comment, much better than I expected or I anticipated. And the quality is high this year, so things really turned out very, very well.
So that's great. The harvest was a little later than usual, right? But the quantity was just as good?
We did delay harvest a little bit because of warm temperatures, which is not something that typically you hear about in Aroostook County. But, you know, when tuber temperatures, you know, start getting above 65 degrees Fahrenheit, you do need to start looking at stopping harvest so that we don't bring all those warm tubers, you know, into storages.
So I just learned a new phrase, tuber temperatures. You're sticking a thermometer right into the potatoes under the ground? Yeah, you're not.
Literally.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay, so I love learning new things. I know that you get asked this a lot, Tim. A lot of people compare Maine potatoes and Idaho potatoes. Can you tell the difference, really?
Oh, yeah.
How?
The flavor of a Maine potato is so much superior to an Idaho potato. It's not even worth talking about, really. I mean, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but we have people that can document that the type of minerals that are present in our soils aren't present out in a different part of the country where they grow a lot of potatoes, Idaho. And that most of the nutrients and things, you know, when the system that we grow potatoes in is significantly different than the system that potatoes are grown in Idaho, where the majority of the water is provided through an irrigation system. All its nutrients are provided through that irrigation system. And here it's just a different type. I wouldn't say it's easier to grow potatoes here, but the environment, you know, Jim talked about the environment and the soils. That makes a huge difference. And the minerals that are present in the soil, some people would say that they impart a particular flavor to the tubers that are grown in it, not too dissimilar from water. When you take hard water and you soften it and you take the minerals out, it changes the flavor of mm-hmm. the water. So it's kind of a similar concept.
So I think that there have been really effective marketing campaigns for Maine lobster and Maine blueberries. Are we working on trying to let everybody else know and brand a Maine potato as a certain kind of potato?
I work for the Maine Potato Board, and
yeah, that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, I know. we have a promotion budget that's small. It used to be a lot bigger than it is today, and that's a function of that. You know, you're going to learn something else maybe. The type of potatoes that we used to grow back when we had the 200,000 acres were primarily a table stock potato, what you would buy in the grocery store, what goes on the table. We'll say 85 to 90% of the crop went in that direction, and so we had something to market. Today, it's probably 70 to 75% of the potatoes grown in Maine go to a processor. So they're a French fry or a potato chip, essentially, or they're a fresh product that's manufactured in Mars Hill as you came by there. That industry markets their own. They have their products to sell. We really don't have a product to sell. I mean, we do have a product to sell to them, but not to really promote to them. They're here to buy automatically, kind of, you know what I mean? And so the table stock piece of that is about 12% of our total acreage is a table stock. Until just recently, retailers were resistant to letting, for example, a Maine grower put Maine on the bag.
I've noticed that. Yeah. I always try to buy Maine potatoes.
Exactly.
And even in a Maine grocery store, I've had a hard time. And I've had to ask the produce guy, where these come from?
Right. And that was intentional because the grocer wanted the customer to come in and request a round white potato. And the grocer wanted to provide that potato year-round and didn't want the customer to worry about what state or country that potato came from. As long as it was present and it was affordable, then that's all they needed. Well, as we all know, that dynamic has changed. People really are more attached to where their food comes from now. So local food is a big issue, and so you see that changing in the retail place, and we can see that ourselves. And so one of the things that we do, you asked about promotion, so I'll get back to that. But one of the things that we have been spending our promotion dollars on is image for the industry within the state. So that's different than selling a bag of potatoes. But we also recently, last year and again this year, are focusing on a particular variety of potato called a caribou russet. That was born and brought up in the University of Maine system. It was bred by Greg Porter. He's a potato breeder at the University of Maine, and it's had tremendous success as far as
it's
consumer
brand new, accept- right?
It is brand new. And so we're excited about that. And we've spent a fair amount of money to get to promote that. And it will be available again this year. This will be the second year it's commercially available. So
I can look for that in the grocery store.
You can, yes.
Okay, Brandon, you farm seed potatoes. Everybody here in Aroostook County knows what a seed potato is, and I suspect that most people in the rest of the United States of America do not. So if you can explain to us, how is a seed potato different from the potato I'm going to buy at the grocery store?
Well, first off, to get a potato plant, you plant a potato, and the plants come out of the eyes you see on the potato. And it's always going to be the same variety. So if you plant a red potato of a certain variety, that's what is going to yield. So in a lot of ways, it's similar to what you're buying in the store, except my goal is to have a very low disease and virus profile to provide to my customers, because those are things that can hurt yield in the long run.
So you're growing your potato with a different set of priorities than someone who's...
Yeah, much different set of priorities.
And your priority is, I want this never to get a disease. Are you breeding them to have more eyes than...
No, for each variety, it is what it is.
Uh-huh.
The breeding programs work on things like that, but we actually get our seed from a greenhouse, and most of the time they're grown hydroponically and they're run through very stringent tests to make sure that those viruses and diseases aren't present. And every time you enter into the environment, that's a chance for those viruses to enter the system. So my goal is to keep them
so
out.
This is fascinating. You get your seed potatoes from a greenhouse, and then you grow those into seed potatoes that are then sold across the country
Yes.
to other farmers.
Yep.
And where are your biggest customers?
Most of my customers are right here in the county.
Okay.
And they are, this is going to get a little complicated. I'm a foundation seed grower, so I grow seed potatoes for other seed growers.
Wow.
And their customers are all throughout the East Coast, from
Florida
on.
Yeah, I was really fascinated to see a map that shows so many Maine seed potatoes going to Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, that's counterintuitive, isn't it? Because it's warm in Florida, and it's a whole different...
Well, yeah, they farm in the winter, and they're winter when it's cooler and the temperatures are more conducive for it.
Okay.
Can I follow up on that?
Yeah.
One of the things that's also interesting and fascinating about seed potatoes that are grown in Maine is that when you have a seed potato that's grown in a cool environment and then raised in a warm area like Florida, North Carolina, those actually yield response to that is that many times those growers will see up to a 10% yield increase by buying seed potatoes that are grown in a cooler climate.
Oh, interesting. Well, Jim, I wanted to ask you, we've mentioned this already, but, you know, we've talked about that there's much less acreage farmed than there used to be. Why is that?
Oh, gosh, that's the million-dollar question or the $500 million question. You know, there's certainly things have changed here. Market pressures have changed in other areas as well. And, Tim, you might respond to that.
One of the reasons is that peak of 200,000 acres happened right around World War II. Mm-hmm. After the war, there were some water projects that went into place out in the West. And land that was arid that you couldn't grow anything on now all of a sudden had a water source and mm-hmm. you could grow potatoes on them. And so that was part of it, a big part of it. And that's why, you know, there was a lot of population out there, and they have a longer growing season, and they're able to get a higher yield per acre out there than we can here. And so that translates into being able to get those into market maybe for less money than what we can do from here. So that really yep. changed things. The interesting thing about, and I don't mean to change the subject, but because it's still kind of the same, but I wanted to make sure that we talked about the fact that, you know, we had 200,000 acres, and now we have roughly 50,000 acres. When we had 200,000 acres, we were growing potatoes on the same acre of ground year after year after year and depleting the soils. Today, you know, we have 50,000 acres, not 100% of that, but the vast majority of that is in a three-year rotation. So it takes 150,000 acres to grow 50,000 acres because you're only on that piece of ground once every 3 years with potatoes. We have growers now that are transitioning into a four-year rotation.
And are they rotating in other crops?
They're rotating, mostly barleys or small grains underseeded with a clover. We have a broccoli industry here that's I think broccoli is one in 5 years, isn't it, Jim?
Yes.
Pretty much. And so that's also a piece of the rotation. And the reason that growers are always trying to expand or increase the rotation is because it has a direct impact on the quality of the potato that you're growing.
Right, the quality of the soil.
Absolutely.
And therefore the quality of the potato. Well, we do have to take a quick break, which I can't believe already. But when we come back, we're going to talk to Senator Susan Collins, who grew up right down the road. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible. As do Cary Medical Center, committed to delivering the highest quality healthcare in a compassionate and nurturing environment in Aroostook County. CaryMedicalCenter.org. And WEX, providing global payment solutions for the fleet, travel, and health industries. Career opportunities at WEXINC.com.
Lawmakers in both parties are questioning how the credit industry works. With so much personal information available,
every second of your existence, someone can come along and pretend to be you, get your consumer report, and get a new credit card or an auto loan in your name.
I'm Kelly McEvers. Proposed changes to how credit reporting works this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered weekday afternoons from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, many of President Trump's critics are hoping he does not serve his full term. But what kind of president would Mike Pence make? That's the question Jane Mayer sets out to answer in her New Yorker profile of Pence, titled The President Pence Delusion. She writes about his ties to the billionaire Koch brothers, who are the subject of her book, Dark Money. Join us.
Fresh Air is tonight at 7 here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and we are broadcasting today live from the UMaine Presque Isle campus. Today on the program, Maine's potato industry. With me here at UMaine Presque Isle, Tim Hobbs. He's Director of Development and Grower Relations for the Maine Potato Board. Brandon Burse, one of the owners of Burse Farms, a seed potato grower based in St. Agathe. And Jim Dwyer is a crops specialist with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And on the line with us right now, Senator Susan Collins. Senator Collins, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, and welcome to the county. You're in good company there.
We are having a terrific time up here. Senator Collins, I think everybody knows you're from Caribou. Did you ever pick potatoes as a kid?
You bet I did. I picked potatoes for 2 years. and I worked for Gilman Albert. He had a very efficient organization, and he usually finished up a little earlier than some other of the farmers, but all of us picked potatoes, all of the kids in my family. And I got to say, it was very hard work, but it taught me to really appreciate the agricultural heritage of the county and the value of a dollar. And it'll show my age, but when I picked potatoes, I think I was paid 30 cents a barrel. And we had the red ticket. We would put
on.
It was collected at the end of the day.
And 30, what, how does that compare, Tim, to today?
There's nobody very few people are picking potatoes today. I don't know. I was paid 50 cents a barrel, so.
Okay.
Because you're younger than
I'm not going to tell you when that was, but
I won't
not
ask
much
either one
that.
Of you. Okay. So, Senator Collins, what misconceptions about the Maine potato do you find yourself having to fight over and over on Capitol Hill?
You know, that is a great question. Back a few years ago, I think it was in 2011 or 2012, the Federal Department of Agriculture proposed a rule that was going to limit the serving of potatoes in both the school lunch and the school breakfast program. In fact, it was going to ban potatoes altogether from the school breakfast program. So I remember going to a hearing, and I brought a bag of potatoes, and I brought a head of iceberg lettuce. And I said, which has more nutritional value? And of course, the potato has so much more than iceberg lettuce and so many other vegetables and fruit that were going to continue to be allowed. And then I did this chart on the Senate floor where I showed that potatoes were an excellent source of fiber, that they give you 27% of your daily recommended value for vitamin B6, and that they were a great source of vitamin C. And I am pleased to say that I lobbied my colleagues on the Appropriations Committee very effectively, and when the vote came to overturn and block the USDA rule, I only lost one committee member. And then later, the Institutes of Medicine, which did a nutritional study of the potato, came out with findings that totally verified what I had been arguing, and said that there's absolutely no basis for banning the white potato from the school lunch or school breakfast program.
Do you think you're having to fight for the Maine potato is over? Do you think you're going to face more battles in the near future?
I think I've won that battle. At least I hope I have. There were also inconsistencies in the WIC program, which is a supplemental food program aimed at pregnant women and young children. And if you bought potatoes at a farmer's market, you could use a WIC voucher, but you couldn't do so if you bought it in the grocery store. I mean, that just made no sense whatsoever. And when the dietary guidelines were revised to recommend, to say that we weren't getting nearly enough fiber, that really helped as well, because the potato is an excellent source of fiber. And by the way, I can tell the difference between an Idaho and a Maine potato. I just want to go on record. And the caribou russet is my favorite.
Well, it's from Caribou.
Absolutely.
I have one more really important question for you, but I think Brandon wants to say something first.
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you, Senator Collins, for all the work you've done for the potato industry, and thank you for being a true champion of potatoes. We really appreciate what you're doing to support us. Thanks.
Well, thank you, Brandon. I remember how proud I was when you were named the Young Farmer of the Year, I think about 5 years ago, if I remember right.
Yeah, I'm not young anymore.
I don't know. He looks pretty young to me. Senator Collins, so here's the big question. What is your favorite potato dish?
I love a baked stuffed potato with cheese. That's probably my favorite. That's really hard to beat. And it dresses up the meal a little bit. And it's delicious. It's just delicious. So
well,
I like
maybe
in all forms, but that's probably my favorite.
Well, thank you so much for calling in today. Senator Collins, first elected the United States Senate in 1996 and well prepared by her childhood in Caribou, Maine. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jennifer.
Before Senator Collins called in, before our break, we were talking about acreage and how the amount of acreage has gone down over the years. But, Jim, I understand the yield, the amount of potatoes produced per acre has gone up. Is that because of mechanization? Is that because of research happening at places like UMaine? What's the difference?
I think it's kind of a combination. As we look at the acreage or the yields, they have gone up. And as we've increased our rotations, our organic matter has increased, so we have better soil, we have better water holding capacity in our soils, and again the fertility of our soils has been increasing, you know, with the better rotations, so that has significantly increased our yields. We've also had a somewhat of a change in some of the varieties. We've gone a little bit heavier with some of the russet types that tend to be a little higher yielding, so that's increased our average yields as well.
So what makes this new Caribou russet so special?
It's kind of a unique russet from the standpoint it has excellent flavor, it has, you know, good culinary characteristics, and it has good it performs very well in the field. The yields have been outstanding, and the size and type has been outstanding as well.
All right, well, we're going to go to Paul, who's calling from Falmouth. Hi, Paul, go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, Jennifer. I want to tell you how much I appreciate the number of programs you had about farming in Maine. That's been great for me. I'm a vet, and I enjoy farming and all that. And I had a comment and then a question. Comment was that I like to try to buy Maine potatoes, and if I go to Hannaford's, I can do that. They usually have the nice paper bags of 5 and 10 pounds of potatoes. But if I go to Shaw's or Trader Joe's, I can't get local potatoes at all. I can just get the Green Giant potatoes. I have talked to the managers at both places, and they say that's a corporate issue, that you can't get Maine potatoes at a Maine supermarket sometimes. And my question was more about the potato chip companies. I'd heard something that the farmers are required to store the potatoes until the chip companies can use them, and they store them at their own risk, and sometimes that causes some loss. Is that true, or is that just something that I heard in rumor?
Yeah, this is Tim, and that is true for the chip industry. Most of these chip manufacturers are chipping year round, and we harvest typically for chip varieties. You're harvesting in late September, early October, and most of those chip potatoes or chip stock will go into a potato storage and be held, and can be held until the following, you know, June. And yes, that grower owns that crop until it goes out the door and is delivered to the processing plant. And so anything that you can imagine that could happen to those, that's his risk. Sure.
Brandon.
Yeah. And it is a risk, but you know, sometimes these large companies will work with you if you do have an issue in storage and you communicate that to them. You know, they might be willing to work with you and try and use up that product before they go to another one, which is storing well. So they do work with you if they can.
Sure.
All right. Well, Paul, thanks so much for your call. We're joined here in the audience now by Richard Rand. We saw Richard when we walked in today because he had parked his old potato barrel truck outside. Richard, come tell us about that truck. It's from 1946.
1946.
And how did you come to have that truck?
Well, I like old farm equipment. I like old trucks. And I enjoyed working on potato harvest. So putting them together, I have the antique potato harvesting equipment out there. I'd like to point out, though, that Sue Collins said that she got paid 33 cents a barrel. I picked potatoes before she did in the mid-50s. and we got less than 20 cents a barrel. But back then, you could get in the movies for 12 cents and then buy popcorn. I don't think you could get that with a barrel of potatoes today. So there's a little bit of inflation going on there.
I know that you take your 1946 potato truck to things like parades. What are you hoping that by actually seeing this truck, people will understand about the potato industry?
Well, that type of harvesting potatoes was done for over a century, where you lay the potatoes out on the ground with a harvester. Somebody comes by, they pick a second section of the field into a basket, and they dump the basket into a barrel. And then you have a crew that comes by, and they put the barrel onto the back of a truck. And then they roll the barrel back and place them, and then, or back even, I've got a picture out there that shows them putting them on a wagon hauled by horses. And
It doesn't look like it was easy.
Well, actually, it wasn't bad. It was fun, actually, for many people. Just setting the truck up out here and putting it in parades, many, many people, they remember that type of work. And a lot of them have fond memories of it. And so when I'm in a parade, I can banter with the crowd. And I'll say things like, you know, if you don't smarten up, I'll shorten your section.
Well, Richard, thank you so much for bringing your truck. If you're in Presque Isle right now, you can drive down and see the truck. It's parked outside on the Umpqua campus. And when you said that a lot of people have fond memories, I saw people in the audience nodding.
I'll leave it out there for a while and I'll answer any questions anybody might have.
Great. And we're also going to post pictures of that truck on our Facebook page and website. Let's see. I'm going to go to a question here. An email from Maddie. She says, are any varieties of sweet potatoes grown in Maine?
Basically, only in a home garden. The sweet potatoes, the growing season is so long. You can grow them in a garden with some season extenders like black plastic and that sort of thing.
Okay. Another question in the audience. What's your name?
My name's Carl Trachtenberg, and I'm a new resident to Maine.
Oh, great.
But I hate to throw a monkey wrench in the beautiful works. I realize that rotating the crops increases nitrogen level, decreases germs, bacteria, etc. But I also note that in this part of the country, there's a super high cancer rate. And investigating this over the last year online, etc., I note that many countries in Europe, low-lying, moist climates that grow root crops, have decreased their cancer rates by decreasing fungicide in their root crops. This must be a concern here. And how do we, I mean, with the moist soil and the record yields that the potatoes are growing, you must be using some types of fungicides. But dioxin is ubiquitous all over Earth, unfortunately, but here much more. And so I'm just wondering how we can help if this is a source of problem and how we can turn it around so the rates decrease in this part of Maine.
Well, one of the things that we have some modeling programs. Dr. Steve Johnson, our plant pathologist, runs a late blight forecasting program that helps growers to schedule fungicide applications. So when the weather is not conducive for the development of the disease, you can reduce, you can increase the amount of time between fungicide applications so you can reduce the total amount of fungicide that's being used. And go ahead, you have a question.
I just wanted to notice on a point on a positive note, we have a well we just did, and we're surrounded by potato and oat farms. There is no pesticide, no herbicide, no nitrates, no chlorine, very small arsenic, little bit of iron. Our concerns about it, I did the testing, the state did the testing to back it, and the point I'm getting at is I was disappointed I found nothing. So, you know what I'm saying, because it was a lot of work and I expected the worst, and there was no organophosphates, right, or organic pesticides in my well, even though, like I say, for miles around, it's oats and the rotation crops.
And I'm very happy you didn't find anything in your well. Our growers, you know, it's the pesticide use is an issue. And, you know, when we were talking about, you know, what are the questions that are going to come up, I said, there's going to be a pesticide question. And there'll probably be a GMO question, which we could address as well. But our growers, you know, so they're aware of this and they live where they grow. And they all have families, and they do an excellent job. I mean, when we talk about stewards of the land, they really are. You know, the last thing they want to do is use up the natural resource, because the way farms transition, or particularly potato farms in Maine, transition is through the generation from one family member to the next. If you wanted to get into potato production in Maine and you weren't involved in a farm, it's very difficult, capital intensive, and most banks aren't going to lend you the money, because it doesn't work unless you're part of that unit already.
We need to go to break, sure. But I want to add to this is in my research this morning, I was reading that because of the warming temperatures and climate change, we may need to use more fungicide because we're having some pests that used to not survive our winter. Is that accurate, Jim?
There are some insects that are coming into the areas like potato leafhopper more frequently than what had happened in the past, but with some of the insecticides that we can use and we have economic thresholds, so and most growers don't want to apply a material unless they have an economic need to apply the material, and that's worked out, you know, very well for us to reduce the amount of material that's actually released into the environment.
Well, Brandon, you're young. You're going to have the farm for a long time. As you look at the changing climate, what do you think about on your farm?
It's interesting, really. You know, with a changing climate, that might mean more opportunities for different crops. You know, just keeping our feelers out there and seeing what opportunities arise from it, possibly. We might shift our focus a little bit, but you got to be dynamic, you know, in this day and age. As, you know, as things change, you got to be ready. That's one thing you can guarantee is that things are going to change. And another note, you know, just on the pesticide use and land, our goal on our farm is to leave the land better than when we got it. To do the type of work, you know, that in the past maybe they didn't do with these rotations and really focusing on the soil, because that's our asset, and that's the one thing I'm going to pass on to my kids if they choose to do this, you know, and I just wanted to make that point.
Well, we do have to take another quick break, but before that, a word about tomorrow's program. We will be broadcasting from Holton High School, and our topic tomorrow, rural economic development. We invite you to attend. Or email us if you have thoughts about promoting economic development in your community. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet us, or post to our Facebook page. You are listening to Maine Calling. We are live from Presque Isle, and we'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the University of Maine School of Law, located in Portland, committed to justice and leadership in a changing world. MaineLaw.maine.edu. MMG Insurance in Presque Isle, protecting your piece of the world. Proud to support Maine Calling live from the county, mmgins.com. And CEI, proud to support Aroostook County and all of Maine with financing, business advising, and industry expertise. Learn more at CEI.org.
Abortion, right to die, stem cell research, modern bioethical issues confront an ancient religion.
Let me make it quite clear that in the Muslim world, bioethical issues are not discussed in public conversations.
How Islam is grappling with modern medicine, next time on America Abroad.
Coming up at 2 o'clock, following Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Tristan Harris once had a successful career in Silicon Valley trying to manipulate your attention. And then he became disenchanted.
And so you started to see technology not as a vehicle for improving people's lives, but really as a means to persuade people to do things.
I'm Guy Raz. Ideas about manipulation? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
This evening at 11 o'clock on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling, broadcasting from the campus of UMaine Presque Isle. Today on the program, potatoes. Joining me today, Brandon Merce, one of the owners of Merce Farms, a seed potato grower based in Saint-Agathe. He is a fourth-generation family farmer. Jim Dwyer is a crops specialist with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Tim Hobbs is Director of Development and Grower Relations for the Maine Potato Board. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Another question here in the audience. Come right up to the mic.
Hi. As you guys were talking about the fungicides and the different pesticides, as non-GMO labeling has become more prominent and organic itself has become more popular and mainstream, have you guys felt more pressure, or has there been any expansion in an organic marker, specifically in Aroostook County? Because I can go to the Hannaford down the road or Shop and Save, and I can find Maine certified organic potatoes. But like you said, even with the sweet potatoes, a lot of it are small farms or like artisan type farms. And like you said, a lot of it up here, I drive for UPS and everywhere I go, potato farms, broccoli farms, everywhere you see. But I don't see any organic things anywhere. But has there been a little bit of expansion in that, or is that still like a new type thing?
I can try to answer that. There has been organic potato production in Aroostook County for quite a few years. Within the last 10 years, though, there's been a measurable increase in the amount of organic potatoes that are grown in Maine, and particularly in Aroostook County, on a commercial scale. And we have, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, there's at least a half a dozen growers that are growing organic potatoes at a commercial scale, meaning that they're wholesaling them to a retailer someplace, not just in a farm stand or or alongside the road. And that's significant. There is a limit to that, though. You're only going to be able to sell so many organic potatoes, and there's some folks in the organic community that, you know, we want, you know, that caution us that, you know, with 50,000 acres of potatoes being grown in Maine, we have to be careful that we don't oversaturate the market with that product.
And you wanted to touch also on GMOs, because that's something that a lot of people in our audience are paying attention to.
And we get that, and I go to a lot of the Board of Pesticide Control meetings, and that's kind of part of my responsibility. And GMOs and pesticides always come up. I'm always asked the question, well, are we growing GMO potatoes in Maine? And the answer is no. There may be somebody that's trying something someplace that we don't know about, but that would be unusual for us not to know about that in the first place. There are no, as far as we can tell, any GMO potatoes being grown in Maine. And the reason for that is not because we're anti-GMO, but our growers will grow what our customer wants. And right now, we don't have a customer that wants a GMO potato. And so, therefore, our growers aren't going to grow something they can't sell. And if someday down the road, who knows when, somebody says, you know, I would be in the market to buy, you know, 10,000 acres of an organic or of a GMO potato, then somebody may take a look at that. But that's how we talk about GMOs.
Thank you guys very much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
I'm going to go to Renee calling from Falmouth. Hi, Renee. Go ahead.
Hi, I am just calling to say thank you to all the potato farmers. I just started a mobile mashed potato business called Mashed in Maine, and I only use Maine potatoes.
Awesome.
And I'm around the Portland area. And the best part about being out and about and selling to different people is when I meet people who grew up in the county and they say, I love this. This is so great. I love this mashed potato trailer. And I think they just appreciate how hard you work and what a great product you grow. So I just wanted to say thank you.
And you know what, Renee, we would love for you to post a picture of your mashed potato trailer on our Facebook page, if you would.
I will do that. I will do that.
Thanks for calling in. Another question here from the audience. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Darius, and this question is directed at anyone who will answer it, but it seems that agriculture as an industry is pretty high risk and comparatively low reward. So what's being done specifically in Maine and Aroostook County to incentivize new people coming into this industry?
Good question.
Oh, wow. That's a good Brandon question. He's wicked sharp. Did anybody tell you that?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't go that far. But I will say it is very difficult for somebody to start farming just from scratch. You kind of have to start small and you got to find a market first. That's the most important thing. Find a place that wants your product. And whether it's potatoes or something else, and then figure out how to grow it, because it's not easy, it's difficult, but contacting your cooperative extension, Jim is a great resource, just to find out what some of those pitfalls might be so you can be proactive about it. But it is very difficult, but also spreading your risks if you were open to growing different types of crops. There's a lot to be learned. And talking to a farmer, go ask them, you know, how would I start up?
There actually is a program series that the University of Maine Cooperative Extension has that's called So You Want to Farm in Maine. And it does kind of walk someone through how do you start.
I have to say, I can't tell you how often the answer to a question on Maine Calling is, call the UMaine Cooperative Extension. Darius, thanks so much for stepping up.
I'd like to hear that.
Email from Canary. Maine farmers have reported that Maine potatoes have 90% fewer chemicals than most other potatoes in the country. Why isn't this part of the Maine potato campaign to build more and better paying outlets for Maine potatoes? Is that true? Are there fewer chemicals used here?
Yeah, that's true. And I'll explain to you why. I can't remember if it's a USDA or EPA. Somebody keeps track of the amount of the pounds of active ingredient that's applied to every crop that's grown in the country, pretty much, but potatoes specifically. And they can tell you how many pounds of active ingredient of a pesticide was applied to an acre of potatoes in Idaho versus Maine, or Wisconsin versus Maine, or Florida versus Michigan. And so being kind of people we are in our office, we like to look at that data and analyze it. And one of the things we discovered is that Maine kind of stands out from the rest of potato production in the country, and maybe even North America, in the fact that that we don't fumigate. In fact, we just very recently, some companies are in taking a look at fumigation in Maine and seeing if that's something that we should, if there's a benefit for that. But as a standard practice and historically, we don't fumigate our ground, meaning you inject it with a chemical that kills, I don't know, Jim's the bug guy, he can tell you what it does. But
nematodes?
Yeah, nematodes.
Nematodes and some of the diseases like verticillium. And it
suppresses those. Well, it takes a lot of material to do that. And by avoiding that step, because we have wicked cold winters that kind of do that for us, we hope, or traditionally have, we don't fumigate. So we don't have that expense, but we also don't have that amount of active ingredient per acre going in the ground. And as it turns out, we use about a tenth of the amount of active ingredient to grow a crop in Maine as other places in the country do, just because we don't fumigate.
Interesting. Question from the audience. Go ahead.
Can you talk a little bit about labor issues affecting Maine agriculture? Specifically, are there still opportunities for young folks who are graduating from high school and college to stay involved in Maine agriculture?
Yeah, and I'll answer it first, and Jim, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to step all over you, but labor is a huge issue for agriculture. It's a huge issue for growers. It's a huge issue from when we're out, when the industry needs technical expertise. You know, who's the person that's going to come behind Jim when someday he retires, and what is their experience, and where have they gotten their schooling, and how good, you know, those types of things. The board is always looking, you know, 5 and 10 years out to where do we get that expertise. And then back to labor on the farm, Brandon can talk to that a bit. It's difficult to find consistent labor in this area.
Yeah, it can be very difficult, especially during certain times of the year, especially during the harvest season when we need. I mean, we do ask a lot. We're asking people to work for 2 or 3 weeks, and, you know, we don't have any work for you after that. But these past few years, I've seen a change. We let out our schools take a break for potato harvest to let the kids come and help us on the farm. And these past few years, I've had to turn people away, and that's unheard of. I've called parents in the past and just trying to round up a crew, and I'm starting to see a real change, and it's great. I think kids have started to see the value in working on a farm, not only the financial benefit, and parents too, you know, just the work ethic, teamwork, working together to accomplish a task and seeing the rewards of that. And I'm optimistic about the future in that category, but it is difficult to find qualified full-time help depending on what you're looking for. I mean, nowadays, a lot of farms are looking for people who have a trade.
Right.
Right.
Welding, mechanic, and that might not be the first place they look.
Well, it's in because of the types of equipment that's being used now and the technology that's available to agriculture. It used to be you didn't need to have any kind of advanced degree to come in. But today, that's what growers are looking for, somebody with the background in those sorts of technologies. There is a definite need for that.
A related question, has the minimum wage law affected your farm, Brandon, and growers throughout the region?
Some growers, yeah. In particular, on our farm, we've always... we haven't paid minimum wage for a while,
right.
But we do expect more from our laborers, and we try to choose, we'll always hire one or two extra people and try to keep the best out of the group. And I don't mind paying extra if somebody's earning that money.
All right. Well, we just have a little bit of time. We're going to try to squeeze in one more question. David, go ahead. David and Kenny Bunkport.
Well, thank you. What a great program. I love these farm programs. A couple of the people in the audience have asked us. The substance of my question is about young people entering the business of farming potatoes in Maine, and the guests have given some good answers, and I'm delighted that there's a young farmer on the guest panel. But I wanted to shift it a little bit and say, what type of financial incentives or foundations might be available to mitigate the high capital costs of entering this wonderful business of Maine potatoes, which I love.
Okay, David. Yeah, we're short on time, but I want to ask, the Maine Farmland Trust has some programs, correct?
Maine Farmland Trust does have some programs. There are some incentive programs through Farm Services Agency to help some folk enter the farming arena as well.
All right. Well, we have so many more questions coming in. I wish we could keep answering them, but we are out of time. I really appreciate all three of you for being here on the program today and all of you here in the audience here at the University of Maine Presque Isle. What a beautiful location. We had lunch looking out over potato fields. Our guest today, Timothy Hobbs, Director of Development and Grower Relations for the Maine Potato Board, James Dwyer, Crops Specialist with the University of Maine Cooperative Extension, and Brandon Burse, an owner of Burse Farms, a seed potato grower based in St. Agathe. That's so fun to say. A special thanks to everyone here in the room and everybody at UMPI for helping us. You guys have been fantastic. Roddy Nickbor ran the board today. Owen Manahan answered your calls. We had additional help from John Bradford, Nick Godfrey, and John Keimel. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, we are broadcasting from Holton High School, and our topic will be rural economic development. If you're in the area, we invite you to attend the show. Visit mainecalling.org for more information. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
Special thanks to our Maine Calling on the Road Aroostook sponsors, CEI, Cary Medical Center, and MMG Insurance.